disturbance in the force.
I have a very bad feeling about this.
Oh, great adventure. In secret. Jedi craves not these things.
We would be honored if you would join us.
I got a bad feeling about this.
So who talks first? You talk first? I talk first.
Go switch off!
This is the 2BT, 2BT podcast. Daddy and Dave are awesome!
Now you're just being stubborn.
Yeah, don't worry about it. I'll do it here in just a little bit.
Take a nap. Right? Yeah. Down, take a nap.
She just got knocked out by Kylo. But yeah, this was, I picked that up. That was at the Disney store that was there. I've got a Boba Fett over there. He's like the white armor. He's the proto Boba. Mm-hmm. And it was like their May the 4th thing special or whatever. Right. They only get so many per store or whatnot. This one doesn't necessarily say it. But the other one had like a May the 4th thing. And this one does have a Return of the Jedi 35th. 35.
Yeah.
Cause, Even the other day was, just the other day, the day that, Solo released on was,
Star Wars.
Was official Star Wars Day.
Star Wars Day.
Yeah, official Star Wars Day. May the 25th, 77 and 83 was, A New Hope and Return of the Jedi's release dates.
Well, that's what's his name? Warwick Davis?
Yeah.
I saw a tweet he put out that, you know, it's hard to believe it's been this many years that this came out and then, you know, he's had a career, thanks to
a job ever since, basically had a career. Cause I was thinking, I was like, that came out in 83 and then he did Willow.
Yeah.
I think he did Willow like almost like directly after that. I don't know, but I know he had, at least Kenny Baker had like 5 or 6 roles in Return of the Jedi. Like he played an Ewok, he played R2 or whatever. You ever been able to tell how you can find out if, Kenny Baker's in R2, or if it's just if you look at the bottom of the droid at the bottom of the R2 body, the version that has Kenny Baker inside of it has like two tubes that come down on the insides of the feet.
Oh.
And if he's not inside of it and it's the actual like remote control version, there are no tubes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And it's for his feet to go inside right there so that we can shake the can back and forth or whatever you want to call it, because it's basically an empty shell at the point that Kenny Baker's inside. Yeah. So,
well, you heard that there's a rumor, you know, it's a rumor that there might be doing a new Willow movie.
Really?
And one cool thing related to Willow is George Lucas is his name on the top. There's two books that are based on or in the Willow world.
Yeah.
And it's George Lucas, written by George Lucas, and a lot of people are going to recognize this name, co-written with, Chris Claremont.
Okay.
Of, you know, Marvel, X-Men fame. And so he wrote those.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Sorry, I sent my cup down. No kidding. Well, hopefully the fancy handy dandy little lid on there will keep it from
that lid leaks.
I'm pretty sure it does. Yeah. But, got that the other night from Thursday night from whenever we went and saw, Solo. So wanted to do a recording on Thursday night. It wasn't going to happen for me.
It's late.
Yeah. I had to get up, go to work in the morning, be there good old 6:30. So that means waking up at 5:00. And I think Steven woke up at like 5:30. And I know you got to get up early.
Yeah. That night I went home, went to bed after 1:00,
woke up
at 6:37, stayed up till 3:00 that night, got up at 8:00.
Good grief, dude.
Then
you just party too much, man.
Not partying.
No. Mike goes home and just starts throwing down with his wife and kids. It's just drinking beer and
wild times. I don't remember what we were doing.
Wild times at the Sparky household.
Yeah.
We'll just go ahead and throw in an intro real quick. Hey everybody, I'm David.
I'm Michael.
See, we're minus the Steven. We can't seem to get everybody in the same room at the same time.
Yeah.
And I've got like a special treat for everybody when we get everybody in the same room at the same time.
Is it another Urban Cowboy playlist? That was awesome.
Wasn't it though, man? Like I had been holding on to that and I wanted to get everybody on the show at one time before I just pulled that out. I've been holding on to that for Gosh. Yeah. Well, I guess so. I guess
probably before I went down to South Texas to work on the
fences
and stuff. I bet you
it had to have been.
It's been hard to get us all in the same room. We've been a couple of times, but
yeah. Steven's unfortunate. He has to work today, and then he's also got to take his kids down to their madre's house for the summer or whatever. So, or at least for a little bit. I don't know if they're going to be down there entire summer or something like that. I know that. You know, I won't delve into that. Sorry. That's Steve personal business. So yeah, I don't know,
but Steven's not here.
But Steven's not here.
He
so
he was just, here Thursday.
Yes. He was here Thursday. He saw the movie with us
and his initial reaction was actually, he had this big smile on his face. I remember that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
He was super happy.
I think we kind of all did, man. I was okay. Let's go ahead and go with yours. We've seen it twice. We just actually went and saw it again. Just, I wanted to get some fresh thoughts in my head for the movie before we came on and did initial reactions or talked about it or whatever. But I wanted to see what your initial reaction was at first.
At first, I loved it.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the heck. It was a fun movie. And, you know, going into it, we knew it was going to be like a, what they're calling a space western. You look at the Wikipedia page, it even says space western.
Yeah.
So it's got all that kind of thing. You're looking for like a train heist kind of movie, because that's what they showed us in the trailer. And you get it, but it's a lot more than that. It expands past that, and there's a lot of surprising things in it for me that I didn't expect. Of course, you get a lot of the cool stuff about... No, I'm trying not to get too spoilery right now.
Yeah.
We can go into a whole spoiler section after we just kind of give our first impressions.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of stuff that's revealed about, of course, how we knew that Han and Chewie were going to meet, where Han came from, this whole setup, how he gets involved to this criminal life or this wannabe outlaw life. Just lots of good stuff in it. My only negative was at the very beginning. It was very, very dark. I had trouble on Thursday night. I had trouble seeing, making out what was happening. Some of the scenes.
Yeah.
And, but I think that was not intentional, because as the movie goes on, it gets brighter.
Yeah.
And in the end, it's just very clear and bright.
Exactly. I think that was all intentional also. Like,
and there were just a couple of scenes that the, and this isn't the movie's fault. I mean, just a couple of like rough edits and, or to me, it seemed like that could have been a little bit smoother cut from this scene to that scene.
Yeah.
But other than that, I loved it.
Yeah. I didn't notice, you know, Star Wars is famous for the wipes of moving into from scene to scene. And I, honestly, now that I start thinking about it, I don't think I saw any in this movie.
No. No,
You know, where it would edit, it would just jump over to another scene or whatever. You'd have the wipe that would go from left to right or do the circle wipe or whatever, you know. But yeah, my initial reaction was I dug it at first. I was like, that's pretty cool, man. Like my first thought was, you know, Donald Glover knocked it out of the park with Lando.
Yeah.
Chewbacca is always Chewbacca. You get to see a lot of Chewbacca and a lot of Chewbacca like throwing down. So. And he's
lots of Chewbacca. I mean,
I'm
gonna tell my Wookiee to rip your arms off and beat you with them. Okay, here's a spoiler. He does that. Yeah, he rips some dude's arms off.
He does.
Wow.
Yeah. But you know, there was lots of Chewbacca, which that of course made me super happy. And at first, I think it was like, because my first initial impression was I saw Alden Ehrenreich doing Solo and I was like, okay, man, he did a really good job.
Yeah.
My first viewing, I can say right now, was that Donald Glover overshadowed Alden Ehrenreich's performance with Donald Glover's like mirror image of Lando, basically, is what it seemed like to me.
Donald Glover he's just a special talented guy. Anyhow.
He is, man. And, he really is.
You know, I always, shout out to this guy named Adam Voivod, does Star Wars 7x7. It's a daily Star Wars show that he does.
Yeah.
His wife's comment on that was that Donald Glover's face eats the screen. Like the camera just is attracted to him.
Yeah.
He has got that star quality.
He does, man. He definitely does. I loved him on Community. I don't know if you ever watched Community, but I loved him on Community. I loved him. And I was trying to think of, I can't remember what the other guys, his buddies, I think it was Ahmed was his buddy on Community, but those two guys, like, they were greatness. That whole show was just greatness. But, Yeah, Donald Glover to me really kind of overshadowed it the first time around that I watched it. And then the second time around, I really kind of wanted to pay attention to Alden Ehrenreich's performance as Han. Because like I said, my first reaction to the movie was like, I dig it, man. This is really cool. You know, and I asked you guys, you know, to kind of list them in order on your favorites so far of the sequel movies or the new era Star Wars. Let's put it that way. You know, not the original trilogy, not the prequel trilogy or anything like that. So, and unfortunately Steven's not here. So I'll just have to, I might get together with Steven and record a little extra.
Oh yeah.
And then we'll put out something on Wednesday also. So this will come out on Monday.
I know he'll have some.
Yeah.
Good thoughts on it.
So maybe he and I can get together tomorrow and record something or whatever.
Because his first reaction was even stronger than mine.
Oh, yeah.
Because I, you know, the thing is, the day after watching it, I started having memories of, well, I remember this happened in the movie. I get it. Because I have this thing where always going to see a movie, especially the first time, that I'm so much is happening in it, I'm overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're always trying to see, am I going to catch everything? And then you start thinking about, oh, this is what that was about. And we had a discussion on Messenger about the Millennium Falcon the next day.
Yeah.
We learned something really cool about the ship being, we've always talked about how the ship is a character in the movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
We could talk a lot just about how the Falcon changes. Because when you first see her, she is pristine and clean. And when you're walking around on the inside, it looks like you're actually walking down, you're watching them walk around on a set of like the Starship Enterprise, nice and clean and perfect.
Yeah.
And, of course, Han, he's a rough dude.
He is.
The ship changes profoundly by the end of it. Little things like that. And it grew on me. And then watching it this time, It just, of course, hit me just right. I mean, it really wowed me on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Just to kind of tie in with that, and you can call this a spoiler if you want to. It's not really much of a spoiler, but one thing I did notice on the second viewing today was that, whatever L3, the droid in the movie, is sitting in the co-pilot spot because she's technically Lando's co-pilot of the Falcon. Mm-hmm. So as she's sitting there and he gets up to go check the dampers right before they go into the Kessel Run, he gets up and she has like a pause or a lapse or something like that. Her head kind of lulls over to the side and she like shakes it and hits her head and it makes a noise. If you listen, that's the same noise that the Falcon makes later in the series. I say later in the series because
kind of like when there's
obviously
a glitch.
Yeah, exactly. Because obviously that's, you know, she's, you know, spoiler, she's part of the Falcon in the later movies, aka the original trilogy. So keep up. If you're not that familiar with Star Wars, you might as well just go ahead and turn us off right now.
Like, sure, a lot of people did when they realized it was Star Wars.
That's wrong. Okay. We don't like them anyways. No, actually, we love them, but still, like, it's all good. I say we go ahead and jump into the meat of this and say it's going to be pretty spoilerific from here on out. So if you don't want to hear spoilers, you'll probably want to just go ahead and shut this episode off right now.
Yeah. So
we'll give you a little pause. I will sit here and I'll wait 2 seconds for you to stop.
And then come back after you've seen it if you care to.
Yeah, exactly.
Ramble on.
If you care to hear what our thoughts are and what we picked up on it. So, all right, starting right now. Okay, actually, I gave you 3 seconds. So here we go. Like I said, that was one thing I really enjoyed, and we're going to kind of touch base on that just again real quick, that it started off really, really dark. And at first I was kind of like you, I was like, man, this is awful dark, man. You can't hardly see anything. The one thing I did notice about the costumes in that area, like it seemed like everybody was like wearing like 1980s, stonewashed, acid washed, whatever you want to call it. Like even Kira, like she was wearing like a mini skirt and had her hairdo kind of done like 80s-ish style or whatnot. So maybe they were trying to tell us that the 80s was a dark time for us or whatever. Right, like, so. but yeah, I do think that kind of like was set up intentionally to go along with like the theme of the movie. Just because as you said, like it starts off dark and then it gradually lightens up and kind of goes through a transition from, you know, him being on Corellia in a dark part of his life and then to the end where it's basically like, hey, you now have the Falcon and like everything's going to be freaking awesome and you and your best friend are going to go on like numerous adventures and whatnot. But I did like the thermal detonator
little trick there. Yeah. That was pretty clever.
That was very Princess Leia ish from
the movie starts out in Corellia. Han is pretty much living on the streets with no family left.
Yeah.
We do learn that he did have a father.
Yeah.
I guess something bad happened. We don't really know what's going on, but he's on the run at the very beginning. He's kind of working. A lot of kids that are homeless or without families are kind of being corralled into working for this underworld lord.
Yeah.
What was her name?
Lady Proxima.
Lady Proxima. And, and there's a reason that it's dark because apparently she doesn't like sunlight at all.
Yeah. I noticed that her henchmen also are the same because as soon as he throws the
Moloch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He has a whole visor thing that, you know, encases his face to where he can't be hit by sun. But just kind of rewinding just a little bit real quick, because there's something important that I wanted to talk about. And this movie doesn't have a crawl, just like what the original, well, I won't say the original, but just like what the standalone stories do, but it does give you a little bit of a lead up. It doesn't do the normal crawl with the yellow lettering or whatever. It has, you know, it gives you the long time ago on a galaxy far, far away and the Star Wars blue, that lettering. That's just what I'm going to call it, is the Star Wars blue, because I haven't seen that color of blue on a lot of stuff before. So I'm calling it Star Wars blue. But anyways, it does that. And then it gives you a little setup.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I can't remember what all it says, but you know,
it says it's a dark time.
Yeah.
It says that it's a dark time in the galaxy.
Yeah.
That
something about crime syndicates are running everything or whatever. And I guess it's still like in the infancy of the Empire, basically.
Yeah.
But that's one of the great things that I saw, is because you do like in the opening scene, it shows the skyline of Corellia and there's a giant Star Destroyer being built above the city or whatever. That was one thing I really, really liked. I will say the music though on this one, like the music is really hit or miss. There's some where, you know, they obviously pull from original Star Wars motion picture soundtrack, pulling straight from the John Williams. And then there's some that's just kind of like, that doesn't really sound very Star Warsy. Like, and I'm not asking you to copy John Williams, but you know,
there is one funny part. Now the Imperial March, right, is actual Star Wars canon existing in the Star Wars universe, because we see an advertisement for come join the Imperial.
Yeah, and it's doing come join the Imperial Army.
That just gave me the giggles.
Yeah.
That's a really cheesy commercial.
That was great. And one of the things that I noticed, I'm going to jump ahead here because we're still talking about music, but one thing that I noticed was that as they're – it's so stupid, but like as they're flying into the planet that they had the train heist and they're on the AT carrier or whatever the devil that ship is, and they've got that music that's playing in the background. And I can't even begin to hum it because I don't know how it goes, but it reminded me of the Lion King. Oh. Like I kept expecting to hear and but you know, it seemed very Lion Kingish. Like there should have been like a monkey holding up a baby lion cub off of one of those cliffs or something.
Maybe if you look closer in the background there, you might see one.
Right.
Snow leopard or something.
That's true. They might have hit it in there somewhere. Could have been a snow monkey and a snow leopard.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hey.
That's why we didn't see it.
they were so well camouflaged.
Yeah.
But the music, that whole sequence, and we were talking about this on the ride home just a minute ago, like the whole car chase, the speeders just looked, to me, they looked, I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because we've always seen the speeders going through dirt or something like that. You know, the land speeders going through dirt and there's being dirt kicked up all around it.
Yeah.
And it seemed kind of strange. I don't know. It seemed like they weren't high enough up off the ground almost.
Maybe
also,
so.
Also, like they seemed just
like they weren't. They kept saying, that's a fast one. Oh, it's so fast.
Yeah.
And I'm watching it. It's like, y'all aren't moving very fast for people that are in like trying to get away with your lives.
Yeah. And that big lugger, like hauler thing, was able to easily catch up and keep speed with them. I was like, oh, okay, all right, well, whatever. But I mean, I know you got to do stuff to keep the movie interesting and add to the suspense of them getting off of Corellia. You can't just like, because then it would have been, I guess, too wasted easy. Time. Yeah, exactly.
And it would have changed the whole movie because, another huge spoiler, it's Han trying to escape with his friend/girlfriend, Kira.
Yeah.
And one of them doesn't make it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I did like the little car chase through the factory because I started looking at the background and see TIE fighters being built.
Yeah.
And it's the ball section, not with the solar arrays on the side, but it's got the ball sections. And the cool thing that I noticed about that, and like, I don't know what this says, but like the colors of the TIE fighters was like that Empire Strikes Back blue, like, this color right here. No, that's not right. Oh, it's this right here.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that color of blue that I did notice. Well, that guy's kind of browning a little bit. That's not good.
Mm-mm.
I know it. Anyways, sorry about that. Had a little, I don't know if I need to clean that or what then, because it's kind of starting to brown a little bit. Anywho, got sidetracked. I picked up one of my TIE fighters in my collection, and then I noticed that it's got some issues, so might just need some baths. I need to dust anyways. Yeah. I don't want to dust.
Dusting's the worst.
Dude, trying to dust this room, it's not an easy task. Let's put it that way. But I got stuff I need to add to it anyways, so I need to just go by. And it's just basically like do a shelf a day.
Yeah.
Because you can't do the whole room in a day because it's just too much.
Especially the shelves and all the figures. It's just like you got to pick each one up individually and.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Itself would be a day.
Yeah. Yeah. If I ever move, I'm not looking forward to that because trying to pack all that and keep the weapons and things like the accessories with them, it's not going to be fun. It's not going to be fun because there's going to be some meticulous moving. Let's put it that way.
You just have to stay here forever.
Right.
Back to Solo.
The music in that chase also, and I don't know, I've been harping on the music, but that music in that chase just didn't seem right, man. It just had like a strange feeling to it to me. Like it just didn't work. Didn't work.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I thought Michael Giacchino or however you pronounce his name that did Rogue One, he knocked it out of the park, man. But he's, you know, a self-pronounced fan of, you know, John Williams. And that was basically kind of like, I think if I remember reading right, that's basically kind of what got him into composing and doing soundtracks for movies besides J.J. Abrams kind of hooking him up or whatever.
Yeah.
But, so you can almost kind of look at him as almost like an understudy of John Williams.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But this guy, like, I don't know, and I'm not saying anything that it was horrible. It just really didn't feel like Star Wars music to me. And I would take that for what it is, but it's boisterous sounds, basically.
Yeah.
So,
like part of it, they might have been, there's one scene, there's a character, and you help me with the name. I'm the worst with saying names. Inverness. How's it?
Infestnest. Yeah.
And every time I caught this time, whenever Infestnest showed up, there was a different kind of sound, with vocalizations.
Yeah.
In it. And I think that was trying to be like create that Western.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Like you would get from, Good, Bad, and the Ugly.
Or oh, yeah.
Old Western movie. And, you know, they're not part of the episodic series. They're their own.
Yeah,
they're trying to make their own little stamp to it.
What it seems like. This is not a knock to the Marvel movies whatsoever, but the music that they were using in a lot of spots in this kind of reminded me of what you would hear in like a Marvel movie, to where it's like, it's really just kind of there. It's like a background. It's not to be, really just in your face and grabbing you and putting you in the moment or anything like that, to where like Marvel, like that's, you know, you can remember the Avengers theme song, but that's about it. You can't think of any of the other themes and throughout there. Going on and moving, you know, to the introduction of Han to Beckett and Val and all those, like you know, he goes and he joins the military, the Imperial Navy, and then it fast forwards, basically jumps ahead 3 years later.
Well, I consider, what is that, 15, 20, maybe even 30 minutes, that initial scene where he's trying to, you know, get away from Proxima and then get through the spaceport and get out. That would be considered like the prologue, the setup.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, that there's a three-year gap. Living in Corellia, growing up there, that could have been a movie.
Yeah.
Him going, escaping, and going to the Naval Academy and getting kicked out could have been a movie.
Yeah.
So there's all that stuff. And that's why one of the things, the only negative thing I really say about it is that first part seems so rushed. And the movie begins when you do this jump. And one of the best battle scenes, y'all were talking about how
y'all
were wanting in Rogue One. And Rogue One had some good fight scenes and stuff. This was like being thrown on the...
Right in the middle of a battle.
Right in the middle of a battle.
I've even gotten my notes here that it... The battle scene on Mimban, where the basically the mud planet, I guess, seemed very inspired by World War One.
Yeah, I can see that,
because they were down in the trenches. They had trenches, it seemed like, everywhere or whatever. There's a lot of mud, because that's one of the two things that you can say that make me want to think of World War One is trenches and mud.
Yeah.
And, you know, it seemed very, very inspired by World War One. And even like the costumes and things like that, like not the regular stormtroopers, but the mud troopers, like the infantry, like even like Han's helmet that he had on kind of almost seemed a little bit, you know, reminiscent of like the, I won't say the pickle helmets, but you know, the Kaiser helmet type things or whatever, that was basically like morphed into what the German army used in World War II. Seemed very, very reminiscent of that.
Like, well, that and the whole, it opens up with him and his following his commanding officer. I don't know if he's a lieutenant or a major.
Yeah.
Saying, follow me over the hill to victory.
Yeah. Your empire needs
what,
you.
And then Han's like, what exactly are we looking for? It's like the nonstop fighting, running and marching and chasing around in the mud. And it seemed just, he was not having a good time.
Oh, no, definitely not. Like I said, that seemed really, really, really inspired by World War One to me. You know, then it kind of cuts again with, I'm trying to remember what happens. You have a cut again and it goes.
Well, he's supposed to follow his commanding officer and his, and this startled me seeing it in the Star Wars movie. His commanding officer is there and then something hits him and he pretty much explodes.
Yeah. Just is
and it's gone. And Han at that moment wisely decides to turn around and run the other way. And that's a common theme throughout, you see throughout Star Wars. You know, it's no secret there.
Yeah.
Running away. he's like, I think I made the right decision to run away. And that's when he runs into, then you get the entrance of Beckett and his crew.
Yeah.
Who are not really part of the Imperial Army, I guess you'd call it.
Yeah.
Military. But they're dressed like it. And so Han attaches himself to them. And they, and you see Beckett walking out. He's a gunslinger, man.
Oh, yeah.
Spinning his firearm on his fingers.
Yeah.
Shooting everything around.
Spinning his blasters like old Western style pistols. Yep. Like he's shooting and twirling, Butt. Like it's Doc Holliday almost.
And Han kind of hears some things said and things start clicking in his head. And then,
he was quick. That's the thing about it. Han is he's observant. And I guess that's what makes him a good card player, you know, is that he notices he catches up with Beckett. It cuts then and you see him like going through trenches there. I guess what you would clarify back or signifies back at their base or whatever. And he comes up on Beckett and Val and, you know, he mentions to Beckett. He goes, Beckett got, captain's armor, basically. He said, by those scorch marks on your armor, you're either a really quick healer or you took that off of a dead captain or whatever.
Yeah.
So kind of Han kind of like finagles his way in with them, but then
tries to. And then they don't necessarily go for it. And he's like, hey, look, he points over to a higher commanding officer and he says, I could just turn you into them. And Beckett proceeds to, he's a better gambler, I guess. He calls a guy over and says, this guy's a deserter.
Yeah.
And they drag him off. Han's like flabbergasted that, oh God, you just one up me on my own idea. And they said, throw him to
the beast.
Wait, there's a beast.
Yeah. And then I will say, as soon as I heard that the first time we saw the movie, I knew exactly what was about to happen. I knew exactly what was going to happen. I knew the beast was going to be Chewbacca. And it was the greatest thing in the world. I got to say, Chewbacca looks pretty badass, all covered in mud. Like he looks pretty terrifying, all covered in mud. Yeah. But he comes up out of this tunnel. He's pulling on the chain. And he's got Han hooked to this. You know, it's great. It's a great fight scene between Han and Chewbacca. And there's a little bit of funny moments. I won't give it away, but there's a few chuckle, ha ha moments with that fight or whatever. And then Han and Chewbacca wind up escaping and wind up getting away with Beckett and them. I don't want to linger too much on that because I don't want to give too much of the movie away.
Yeah.
And I just did because I told that, you know, they get away because of that. But, there was a mention in there and I can't remember what part it was, but they mentioned something about the Zan sisters. And I'm curious if the Zan sisters, the way it's, and it could just been because it's Woody Harrelson that said the line.
Yeah.
Or Beckett says the line. And I just kind of wonder if it could have meant Zahn. Like maybe it was a homage to Timothy Zahn, who wrote some of the, I won't say some of the first Star Wars novels that were not the novels of the movies, basically. Well, I guess there was some, there was a, I can't remember who did it, but there was solo books that came out that was like Splinter of the Mind's Eye and, and whatever. But there was that long gap. And then you had the Zahn novels or what's known as, oh crap. I can't think of the guy's name. The Admiral, Grand Admiral Thrawn, the Thrawn trilogy or Thrawn series of books. And I'm not a Thrawn fan, but, it's Timothy Zahn that wrote those. And so I'm just wondering if that Zahn sisters was, the Zahn, I think he called them Zahn, but I'm just kind of wondering if he, if it was actually, you know, written as Zahn. I'd like to see the scripts and see what the, what the actual line is, because if that's the case, and that's pretty neat that they would kind of do a throw out and a nod to Timothy Zahn, who kind of helmed the, I could almost say rebirth of Star Wars in the early 90s, whenever it was like basically the dark times. There wasn't anything out.
Yeah. You know,
there wasn't anything at all.
Or what people kind of could cling to.
Oh, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm trying to read my. Oh, there is. And this is going to, this is going to be kind of odd. And some of the diehards will know this. One thing that kind of, I won't say it took me out of it, but the one thing I did notice in this one is, buttons. Buttons on the costumes and, and the original Star Wars and the original Star Wars movies, George Lucas didn't want any sort of tie to the real world.
Yeah.
So all the costumes, all the fasteners on costumes had to be hidden, or they could not be things like buttons or zippers or Velcro or anything like that. Han's hood and the fur coat, whenever they get to the snow planet where they're doing the train heist at, his hood has buttons on it.
Oh.
His holster has buttons on it. Yep. Yeah, it has a snap on it. Has the buttons. And so I saw that and I was like, it's going to make life in 501st and Rebel Legion and stuff like that a lot more easier now because they're going to allow them to, I mean, now they've got to allow them to have buttons because it was, you know,
in a movie.
In a movie. It's definite fasteners in a movie. I gotta say, man, the train heist thing, I loved it. The whole blowing up the bridge and the train going off the end, like it just felt like a Western train heist. And all you gotta do is picture that the ship that they're trying to get away with in as a horse. And they're trying to offload all the mail or the gold or the money from the Western Union to the horses or whatever. And even, you know, blowing up the bridge and it goes off the end. Very, very, very Western. So I was like, awesome. Awesome. It's just things like that. Just is great.
And that's where you also get introduced to the, I thought this was going to be the big bad of the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. Emphas Nest.
When they show up.
Yeah.
The Marauders.
Yeah.
And they're pretty awesome.
They are pretty awesome, but there's a twist on them. I don't want to go too spoilerific, so we'll keep that a hidden little secret.
Yeah.
There's also another big, what I like to call the what the hell moment of the movie that we won't say what it is for a couple of weeks. Yeah. So it gives everybody a chance to go out and see it. Because it's pretty cool. Like I saw it and I was like, and I'm pretty sure y'all heard me in the movie theater because I actually verbally spoke out loud and said, what the hell?
Yeah. It's pretty amazing there.
Yeah. I have one word written on this part of my nose here and it just says Lando.
Lando
steals the show, man. He is smooth. That, you know, as you don't even have to see his face. He's just walking in and he's talking. And as Han asks, you know, if there's an open seat or whatever, and you can just tell that it's Lando. Like I'm just blown away on how well that Donald Glover portrayed the character.
Billy Dee. I mean,
I know, right? I'm wanting to do some Colt 45 commercials now or something like that.
Exactly what I was thinking.
Works every time.
Yeah.
Yeah. The card game, I thought it was great. I thought the whole way that Han basically sharks him, you know, even by going as far as, you know, saying Sabacc whenever he goes to sit down and he's like, no, it's called Sabacc or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I guess, I don't know if Lando kind of knew that he was trying to play him a little bit because he threw out the hand and he goes, it's Han. Or,
that's fine though.
Yeah.
But that's fine.
But what's great and what I think is awesome is like the paying attention to detail like that somebody actually took the time to go like, okay, well, why is that Lando always calls Han? Well, everybody else in the universe calls him Han.
Right.
There's only a person that calls him Han is Billy Dee. Or I'm sorry, Lando Calrissian. But even whenever Billy Dee's talking about the movies, he calls him Han Solo. Yeah,
they've given a reason in the universe why that is. Back to this card game.
I wrote down Force theme. Apparently, I guess there's a Force theme right there, and I can't remember what exact part that is. Mm-hmm. Might be like, that's what it is when they walk up to the Falcon for the first time. Because after they meet Lando, and he, you know, some little trickery happens, there's a card game and whatnot. And they wind up having to take Lando with them instead of winning his ship. But that's at the point in time where Han and Chewbacca are first introduced to the Millennium Falcon. And they kind of turn the corner and there it is. And then that whole sequence is filled full of just greatness, if you ask me. Just to see the first introduction of the three characters together. Let's put it that way. Han and Chewbacca and the Millennium Falcon. The Force theme, like, it's just one of those things of like,
oh, we did skip over a part. I don't want to get into it, but, the reason there he had to go find the ship.
Oh, yeah.
Because,
yeah.
I don't know what we want to say, but basically Han screws something up and, he joins with Beckett to make things right and gets in with a little bit higher level of,
gets in over his head. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. He steps up in the world. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the
Paul Bettany. Is that guy's name?
I think so. I can't remember.
He did a great job.
Oh, God. Yeah. And he's one of those dudes that I've seen in lots of movies and TV shows and things like that, but I never can remember the guy's name.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's just because for some reason he reminds me of Sting.
A little bit.
I feel like I should have seen him in Dune or something like that or whatever. But they're on a task to kind of recuperate a cost. Let's put it that way. I'm trying to keep it vague and kind of, I know we're going super spoilerific with this, but I also want to leave some surprises for you guys that haven't had a chance to see it yet. Aurra Sing, that was great. I thought that was the great that they pulled that up because, Beckett and Lando meet. Lando mentioned something to him about killing Aurra Sing, and he said something about, I think he said he just pushed her off a cliff or whatever.
Yeah.
Something to that effect.
Well, yeah. He said, I pushed her. that's an Easter egg for people that.
Oh, yeah. But that's one of those things of where I'm so glad they decided to throw that in there. And then Clint Howard's role was great. Clint Howard is Ron Howard's brother. So. He always finds a way into one of Ron Howard's movies. Like I remember in, he's not the prettiest of humans. Let's put it that way. I have no room calling anybody ugly because I'm pretty damn ugly myself, but that guy, he's pretty rough looking and I remember his role in Apollo 13 where he's one of the guys at Mission Control.
Yeah.
But he's basically had just about, I don't know if you could say that his career is based off of his brother, but let's go ahead and fast forward a little bit. We're going to go ahead and jump into the Falcon and the going towards doing the Kessel run because there's a reason why they've got to go to Kessel, the Spice Mines on Kessel. And that was one great thing that I was glad that we got to see also was of course the Kessel run, but the Spice Mines of Kessel. I would have liked to seen a little bit more of the Kessel run just because I feel like it should have been more of a, climactic event than what it was. I mean, it was still pretty climactic. It was still like pretty intense, but yeah. I feel like, you know, it's one of the things that Han's always boasting about is 12 parsecs, 12 parsecs, 12 parsecs.
Well, it is if you round down.
Yeah.
It's little funny things like that.
Oh, yeah, exactly. But the Han and Kira kiss in the Falcon. Like, it seemed so
wrong.
Well, it seems so reminiscent of the Han and Leia, even all the way up to the interruption, you know, with the, you know, C-3PO interrupts Han and Leia, yeah. But Becca interrupts Han and Kira. I keep wanting to say Kira, but it's Kira, I guess. But there's a few other little Easter eggs in that area. I'm pretty sure y'all probably didn't hear me just in because I was bending over, set my water back down. But there's a few more little Easter eggs in that area, like the Lando Skiff Guard costume.
Yeah.
Which you see Beckett in later, which is great.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah. Really just, cool. Just seeing things like that. And I'm pretty sure I need to check, actually. Yes. The, one of the capes.
Okay. Yeah.
One of the capes that Kira is trying on is actually looks exactly like the cape from The Empire Strikes Back that Lando's wearing at Bespin or Cloud City. Anyways, you know, it's the blue cape with the gold lining and just great. And so things like that, little things, little Easter eggs like that, to me, it's just great, man. Like you get people like to call it fan service. And if it's fan service, then I love it because yeah, you gotta give the fans something. You know, people want to complain and call things fan service. Oh, that's just fan service. Well, what do you call like the?
It doesn't hurt anything though. I mean, let's say, okay, you and I are different tiers, I guess, of how much attention, you know, you are a lot farther into your knowledge of things and noticing things than I am.
Yeah.
About lots of stuff. But let's say, okay, I didn't notice that it didn't hurt anything that they did it, but for you, it might be just a little bit added. Oh yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that they're doing that much is, to me, it's kind of cool.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and I say it's like the whole, like, you know, setting up like the Avengers and they'll pull back and they'll have that slow motion scene of like, you know, the Hulk and Thor and Cap and Black Widow and Iron Man. And they're all like in a line, like about ready to go beat somebody up or whatever. Yeah. And it's to me, that's the same thing. That's a splash page that they're giving people in a movie. Whereas you would usually have that in a comic or, you know, a cover page or whatnot. But, you know, with Star Wars, you don't have splash pages because granted, there's been comics, but there's not comics that they're making the story into a movie of or whatever. So call it fan service if you want to. I call it awesome. I like seeing little Easter eggs like that. It's greatness. Man, my writing is so horrible in the dark. It's hard to read it, but this is one of the things I love most about the movie. And I think we already talked about this a little bit earlier, but, finally getting to see Chewie cut loose. Seeing Chewie cut loose, like we've seen Chewie kind of kick some butt beforehand, but never like this, never as pronounced as this.
Usually it's a gunfight.
Yeah, exactly. Him,
this like, is taking on a bunch of people just with empty handed.
Yeah, just like with his crazy Wookiee strength, basically. my favorite, just, you know, they're in the elevator going down into the mines of Kessel and, you know, they jump the guards and release themselves and Chewbacca pulls the guy's arms out of his sockets, yep. Like straight out of his sockets, not just like kind
just
of
standing
like
there holding the guy by the hand and he's looking at Han like, what am I supposed to do? And Han says, you know what? That's just great. That uniform would have fit me perfectly.
Yeah, exactly. Great. The one that would have fit me perfectly, you had to go and rip the arms off of or whatever. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, things like, this just, I loved getting to see Chewie cut loose. I will say the Wookiee, you know, he splits off from Han whenever they get down to the spice mines because he sees some Wookiees down there being mistreated, some slaves, and Han releases him to go help and free those guys.
Yeah.
Now the Wookiee without any fur on his face is kind of weird looking.
Yeah.
That one, I don't know why they did that. That, I don't know if maybe it's supposed to be an adolescent Wookiee. Maybe he's supposed to be super old.
I took it that it was super old. Yeah. He's a whole lot older to me.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it is. You know, maybe as Wookiees get older, they start losing their fur on their face, or maybe it's reverse.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just wish they would have put some fur on his face, man. It just looks so strange. It kind of reminded me, made me think I was watching, you know, Planet of the Apes. I'm not saying Planet of the Apes is bad. I'm just saying like it kind of took me out just a little bit.
Well, that's one thing that, I mean, that was part of Chewie's goal, was when they're sitting around the campfire and Han says, hey, what are you gonna do with your money? And he's like, I just want to go out and try to free my people, because that they just been enslaved.
Yeah.
He was a slave at a place. These guys were had been sold into slavery apparently somewhere else, and you know that gave him that opportunity to you know go do it. And Han left. It's not like Han had control over Chewie.
Yeah,
Chewie was is his own person. But you know that gave Chewie some kind of a fulfillment of this need that he had. And he had an opportunity to stay with the Wookiees, and it's that moment where he chose to go with Han.
Yeah.
That's when this whole friendship and bond really was born, because he didn't have to stay. He made that choice, and maybe it was because, you know, you keep hearing about the life debt.
Yeah.
And I think Steven asked the other night, well, was when this happened part of causing the life debt? Because they don't spell it out in the movie.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe that is. Maybe, or they just formed a bond and he decided he wanted to go with
it. And it could be that they just formed a bond. You know, who knows? Maybe Chewbacca, I always said like maybe like the life debt was a forever type.
Yeah.
Servitude. You know, I wouldn't even say a servitude, but you know, that he's a forever type bond. But then again, who knows? Maybe he had already paid it forward, but there's just two good buddies or whatever.
Or maybe he just likes the Millennium Falcon because Han's gone after, after right. The Force Awakens and he's sticking around.
Right. It's possible. Oh, I'm going to show you this in my notes real fast. It says, that's supposed to say finally seeing Chewie uh-huh. rip someone's arms out of their sockets, but it's dark in the movie theater. And, cause I was sitting here going like, what the devil does that say?
Rest man? In peace, Sancho. Yeah, Sarah.
That's what it looks like, doesn't it? Like, it's so bad, man.
Nah, it's pretty good, for as dark as it was.
Oh, that's part, though, I will say the you know, they go to leave Kessel and they run into the Star Destroyer and then they start getting chased by TIE fighters. And that's, to me, like, where the music really starts getting good, because you have this medley going on with not just music from the movie, which I thought was great. At this point in time, it seems like the guy, I can't think of the composer's name that did the music for this, but he really kind of kicked it up. But then he kind of, like I said, he did a medley, because he threw in like the songs that I heard in there specifically, like really prominently, was you have the escape from the Death Star, that dun, 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 dun. Yeah, it's a little bit of the Force theme thrown in there, but, that along with, the asteroid belt from Empire Strikes Back. Like, and that's one of my favorite tunes, man.
Yeah.
Something about that tune, the way it's laid out, it just kind of moves you all over the place, which whenever you're actually listening to the song, it makes you feel like you should be like, don't listen to it in your vehicle, because you'll wind up weaving in and out of traffic and all over the place or whatever. It's just bad news or really fun, whichever way you want to look at it. Oh man. Well, I got some things here and I'm trying to figure out how to work my way up to them, because there was some, you know, after the Kessel run, and like I said, the Kessel run, I'm not saying it was bad. I'm just saying it was a little bit anticlimactic for me. Like I feel like it should have been more, even though there's a lot of intense stuff going on, I would have liked to seen an extended, a little bit more of it, you know, right. Maybe like they had to jump from this space to this space. And maybe a few more things. And I noticed that there was a few things that they had in the in the trailer spots on TV that I'm guessing got edited out.
Yeah.
You know, for maybe length of time or whatever for the movie or whatnot. But there was a few trailer spots that I remember seeing in trailers that did not make the final cut of the film.
Yeah.
Well,
that's one of the cool things that you get out of this movie is at one point Lando says, you can't do the Kessel run in under 20 parsecs.
Yeah.
And this is where they caught the character of Han Solo. It's like when he's in one of the newer movies and Finn goes, can you do this? Or have you done this before? He says, we're about to find out if it's possible. Yeah, when they're trying to get at hyperspeed and force to go through this, the
shield generator. Shield, yeah.
To go down there. And it's like, well, no, I've never done it, but we're going to try to see if it works. That's what he did. He did in this. It's like starting out then. He's like, let's just try this.
Yeah, exactly.
And it works. Yeah.
And I think that they did the character of Beckett really well too, because you can see where Han picked up a lot of Beckett's mannerisms.
Yeah.
Even there directly at the end of the movie where he calls Impha kid.
Yeah.
You know, and it's he'd gone through the whole movie where Beckett's calling Han kid the entire time, and then now all of a sudden
throughout the movie Beckett keeps trying to like, I was just like, okay, you're annoying. I don't want you around. But since you're around, I'm going to try to teach you a thing or two to keep you alive. And he's constantly teaching these lessons. And, you know, Han's Han. You don't know if he's following directions. He doesn't follow directions or pay attention. He kind of does his own thing.
But oh, yeah.
You find out at the end of the movie, yeah, he paid very close attention to the lessons he was being taught.
Oh, God, yeah.
And he learned a lot.
Yeah. Because he even throws back one of his own lessons to Beckett. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a couple of things I noticed in here too, like that just one glimpse of a character was Two Tubes that you see in, Rogue One. He's kind of like, Saw Gerrera's like right hand man. He's the guy that they call him Two Tubes because he's got the two tubes that comes off his face mask and kind of like goes back or whatever. I don't know what he's supposed to be or whatever. Another neat thing I remember seeing in this movie, which I thought was really cool, was a different colored Rodian, which Rodian is a Greedo. I always thought they were just supposed to be green or whatever. Yeah. But this one, he was kind of like a peach, kind of orangish, okay, kind of reddish color or whatever.
Yeah.
That was really cool. Another little nod, little homage that I saw was in the office fight scene was the Mandalorian armor. On like a statue on a stand or whatever in the background.
And you never know why it's there. Is it decoration? Is it the guy's armor?
Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder. Is like, was he a former Mando at one point in time? Or whatever. So lots of little nods, lots of little Easter egg things. So, and that's what's great. Like I said, this is our second time seeing this. I didn't notice the Mando armor the first time around.
Yeah.
But Steven actually brought up the Star Destroyer from the first time that we saw it, and I didn't even see the Star Destroyer, and he brought up the TIE Fighter, so that what kind of cued me off to start looking for those. But, you know, it all comes down to one thing. Han shot first. Yeah.
It's settled.
Exactly. You know, and, you know, even the original trilogy, everybody, well, I won't say everybody remembers, but I remember those that, you know, we had the old VHS tapes all the way up till 94, I think is whenever they, or 97, whenever they re-released the movies and they kind of added some CGI stuff in and they changed it to where Greedo shot first and Han had a really jerky head movement to dodge the blaster bolt and then he shot. Han shot first. And it's very clear in this movie that Han shot first. I think that's all I'm going to give you. Let's just put it this way. It's one of those things that they show reactions and even Chewbacca was very shocked. A
couple of observations I had from this movie. One is it was written by Lawrence Kasdan and his son, Jonathan Kasdan.
Yeah.
And somewhere I remember picking up, reading or hearing Kasdan, when he's writing, he likes movement. Not necessarily physical movement. He likes the story to move. And when this movie starts, opens up.
Oh, it's.
You're going here to here to here to here. And there's very little opportunity to breathe before something else is happening, which is cool because you're not going to get bored watching it.
Yeah.
One perilous thing after another, one mystery or hard thing to defeat after another. And so that's classic Kasdan. That makes it classic Star Wars almost.
Oh, God, yeah.
And two, Han.
Yeah.
He's a talker.
He is.
He talks his way out of trouble and into trouble all the time. That's something that's from the very beginning when we first made him in the cantina in A New Hope. He's a talker then, and he talks his way all the way through to The Force Awakens. When the classic scene now to me, when the two gangs board his ship and he's trying to talk this one out of it and this one out of it, causing trouble, you know, that's him. And they show that he was always a talker.
Oh yeah.
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 That's good stuff. And the main theme of the movie, if there's a theme to this movie.
Yeah.
And it kind of goes back to The Last Jedi, the theme of The Last Jedi, freedom.
Freedom. Freedom and hope.
It's for hope lots of different people, freedom from lots of different things. Freedom from Corellia, freedom from, it's just a constant
freedom theme. From the Empire.
Yeah. The Wookiee's freedom. Yeah.
Wookiee's freedom. The droid's freedom.
And can we talk about the gun? scene.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Beckett and Han are walking through, and Beckett takes Han's rifle from him.
Yeah.
And then later on, they're sitting together around the fire. I want confirmation on this because, you know, they don't focus. He's basically taking apart the rifle and reconstituting it as that gun, right?
As a pistol, yeah.
A pistol.
Yeah.
That's why it has that look with the big oversized scope.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I wasn't sure the first time around if I was right or not.
Yeah, because it shows him take off the barrel and he throws on the I guess you'd call that a flash suppressor there on the end of it or whatever, and takes off the collapsible stock. And basically throws that on there and hands it back over to him. And you see the, what became Han's DL-44.
Yeah.
It's great.
I got another question to ask you.
All right. What's up?
I was listening to a podcast the other day and I like the guys on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's a Major Spoilers podcast. I brought them up before. They're one of the first podcasts I ever started listening to.
Yeah.
And the guys on that do the show, the main host, his name is Steven Schleicher. Really smart, good guy. He has another guy that's been a buddy of his since college named Matthew Peterson, and they were reviewing, they're actually doing a review of one of the new Marvel books, Vader Down.
Okay.
Which is a book that takes place, after A New Hope, I think, and maybe before Empire, cause there's been no reveal that I am your father.
Yeah.
You know, and, Steven said something that, you know, he says, it's a good book, but why should I read it? There's no consequences because I know how it ends.
Yeah.
This is a movie that some people could say, well, I know how it ends.
Yeah.
Because I've watched the other movies 30 years ago. I know what's going to happen. Is there a value to a movie that's a prequel like this, or a movie that jumps in between?
I think so, because to me, it's about the story of the character. You know, it's not, even though you know what's going to, even though you know what the outcome's going to be, you know that the characters are going to survive, but I mean, even with comics, you know, unless you know that they're coming up with the reboot, you know that the main character is going to survive.
Yeah.
You know, very seldom do you have, unless you've got George R. R. Martin writing something, like very seldom do you have the main character in a book being killed for whatever reason.
Right.
You know, if they are killed, then it's to usually make the ultimate sacrifice to save his friends or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's that whole, you know, to me, it's that whole, you know, cliche thing of it's about the journey, not the destination. Like, even though you know the destination, you know where you're going. You've been at a destination thousands of times before, but you might have, you're taking a different route this time.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's what it is to me. You know, and that seems to be like a pretty common thing of people saying, well, why should I go watch this? Well, why should you go watch an Avengers movie?
Yeah.
You know, or Captain America movie. Because you know Cap's gonna survive because you've got an Avengers movie coming out in a year, you know, or same thing with any of the other heroes.
Game of Thrones prequel. Why should I do that? In another year, we're gonna know if the what happens
exactly. Ultimately. Exactly, and it's, you know, if you know if that's the view that somebody wants to take on it, then that's their view, and you know I feel bad for them because now you've just said since I know this story already. I can't read anything that's going to lead up to anything else because what's the point? I know how this is going to turn out. Like you said, the prequels to Game of Thrones, any Marvel movie, because like I said, you know, you've got an Avengers movie coming out in like 2-3 years. I don't know how often that they put the Avengers movies out, but it feels like it's 3 years between each Avengers movie, but you know, they've got 9 to 12 movies that comes out between each Avenger movie. That's each individual hero. Well, you know that these heroes are going to live. So what's the point in watching that then? Because you know that they're going to show up in the Avengers movie because that's the whole point of them doing the standalone film for each and every one of those characters.
Yeah.
They're not going to kill those characters off and they're standalone. So what's the point in watching it? To me, it's, you know, If you're going to take that narrow viewpoint on it, then yeah, then you should just give up and you shouldn't watch TV shows. You shouldn't watch anything but sports because you don't know what the outcome is going to be on that.
Yeah. Well, to me, what you get out of it, I got one. It's a good story. It's fun, a fun action packed story.
It is, man.
And there is some character. You get to see little tiny snippets of what made this character that shows up later on.
And that's what I loved about it, man.
Some background.
Yeah.
Oh, this is why this is this. We, oh, this is, we're, I don't want to something about a name. This is where this name comes from.
Yeah.
I don't know. I get value out of it just because it's entertaining. It gives you a little insight into like origin story. Mm-hmm. They do origin stories all the time for like in comic books. You'll have read about a character and then they go back and they're, oh, I guess I should give an origin story for this character.
Yeah.
So this is the origin story for this character.
Exactly.
Han doesn't get his head chopped off in the end of it because we know he can't because he has to get stabbed by his son about 30 years later. Doesn't ruin it. I didn't think about that once, except I did think about that once near the end of the movie.
Yeah.
What happens to him later in life does play a part in the way I look at this movie because something happens in the movie.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons that Han is around to get killed by his son is because he didn't take the precautions that he should have taken.
Yeah.
At the end of his life.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
And like, you know, I've read some theories where they say that Han might have even helped his son do that.
Yeah. I've watched that scene over and over and I don't know.
Yeah. I'll still say that's a beautiful scene as much as I hate it. You know, sitting in the theater, I remember sitting there and I think I was sitting next to you and I was like, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because you knew as soon as he walked down onto the catwalk,
I don't know if you ever talked about it on recording,
but what's that?
You had a long talk with me one night. We were watching it, the end of it and you said, here, just, I want you to watch this. The way the light is used and the color in that scene and with the symbolism and like the foreshadowing, just all the cool little things.
Yeah. The symbolism in that scene where it has Han and he's walking out and at the point in time that he walks out and he meets Kylo Ren, aka Ben Solo, out in the middle of the catwalk, you know, the Starkiller base is actually sucking in another sun to power its main weapon.
Yeah.
So as they meet out on the catwalk, there's a big opening to the sky and you still have some light coming in that's from the sun that's being pulled in or whatever. And they have this whole conversation, you know, blah, blah, blah. I can't remember the words on that one. I love Force Awakens, but it's not ingrained in my memory like what the original trilogy is. But, you know, I had this back and forth between Ben Solo and Han Solo. But as they get done and Kylo's actually about to hand his saber over to Han, the light starts dimming. And as it starts dimming, it goes to almost pure blackness, but there's a little bit of red highlights coming in from the side. To me, and that decision making it's where you can see Kylo actually fully going to the dark side. He has made the decision at this point in time that he is not handing over his saber. He's about to run his dad through. And once it goes completely, totally dark and there's a little bit of a red glow, that's whenever the saber ignites and runs him through. And it's, to me, it's all symbolism. It's symbolism about the choice that the character's making at that point. It's a really clever use of light. If you ask me, I thought it was beautiful. It's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's, I don't know. I won't say it's like, you won't notice it if you're not really just paying attention to it. Like to me, you know, it's just a use of light to also tell the story along with the words and the characters that going along with it. And it's just, you know, it's one of those things that it's moving, man. It's definitely moving. I dig it. And that's,
yeah.
You know, that's J.J. Abrams storytelling.
Yeah. Yeah. Just good stuff.
Oh yeah.
So where does this movie sit in the four for you?
In the four for me so far. And I've been having trouble with that, man, because like I mentioned to y'all, I was like, man, let's come up with a ranking of the sequel trilogy. Even though this is a prequel, it's still a sequel because we'll just say the new era Star Wars. So far, my number one still goes to Rogue One. Okay. Rogue One is still my top of the new era Star Wars. Number two, I'm going to go with Solo. Solo is my number two. I really, really, really enjoyed this, man. I really liked it. And then three and four is probably a tie between The Last Jedi and Force Awakens.
Yeah.
They both have like really good aspects of each one that I love about the films. But I think anything that really has some sort of tie in to the original trilogy is probably always going to get ranked higher for me.
Yeah.
Just because
that's what I was thinking, you know, because it's really hard for me to group the, what would you call it? The solo, not the solo, the standalone stories.
Yeah.
That go with the earlier movies with the ones that are coming out now.
Oh yeah.
And that's when you said that the other day. It's like, oh God, I can't do this because I look at The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Force Awakens is special to me just because this is the first movie in this new era.
Yeah.
So that's awesome for that. Rogue One, great adventure story. Hey, we knew everybody was going to die.
Oh yeah.
It's a good story.
Again.
Shows the payment that people actually did because they're just from one little line in one of the earlier movies.
Yeah. They come from the crawl. Yeah.
And then, you know, to me, The Last Jedi is, and this is, a lot of people are going to disagree with me. The Last Jedi, I think, is the best made of these four movies.
I think so.
The level of care that went into almost every scene.
Yeah.
And how much I still get out of it every time I've watched it.
And the attention to detail of the character of Luke.
Yes. It was amazing.
Yes.
And then this one was just fun. This was the funnest.
Oh yeah.
One. And it should be because
it's an adventure story of Han and Chewbacca. It's an adventure
story and it was fun. Got to see the meeting. So yeah, I can't really do that right now. I think I'd have to say The Last Jedi still for me.
Okay.
Is number one. And I'd probably group Solo and Rogue One together.
Yeah.
And The Force Awakens though is just shifted over to the side and up here to the left.
I totally agree with you on that one. Cause to me, I was having trouble and like, I was just like, you know what? I'm just going to go ahead and say it like this, but you almost have to have the two different categories for them just because they are two different eras or they're coming out in the same era, but they're set in the two different time zones of the saga itself, period. Even though I know that these aren't considered saga movies, the saga movies are the actual numbered ones. These are standalones. But you know, it's hard to group them like that. But like I said, I'm always going to take anything with original trilogy ties, just because like whenever I see a stormtrooper on screen, it touches something. It's kind of the same thing with a Star Destroyer or a TIE fighter or whatever, X-wing fighter, whatnot. Like it's gonna, you know, I'm gonna probably prefer that one just because it's where my heart is, man.
This ties into a list I saw, and everybody loves lists. We just made our own little list. This is called The Wrap, and they did a listing, and it surprised me a little bit where some of the movies come in. The worst movie, according to this person that made this list, and it's all, you know, it's just their choice.
Yeah.
They chose Episode One, The Phantom Menace. I think a lot of people would probably agree with that. That comes in at number 10.
Yeah.
Then after that is Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
See, I would have swapped those.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then they say they put Rogue One all the way down at number 8.
Really?
Yeah.
That's shocking. I think
a lot of people have heard that, but I get why.
Yeah.
I think Steven would probably rank it higher too.
Yeah.
Then Solo.
Okay.
And then Return of the Jedi.
Oh, wow.
Right. Then they had Revenge of the Sith.
Okay. See, I would have, yeah.
They give, I don't want to go all into this because they actually do have reasonings behind it and the highlights between why they chose it. And then the next number 4 is they chose Force Awakens.
Okay.
And number 3, The Last Jedi. 2 is The New Hope. And of course, everybody was going to say and agree with this. Most people will agree the Empire Strikes Back
as the number 1.
So,
and that's just kind of like why I think I like Solo so much is because Empire Strikes Back is character building.
Yes.
That's a lot of character building that goes on in that movie. And Solo is basically showing the building of Han. Like it to me, it just adds more character building to the character building that Empire Strikes Back does.
Yeah. Yeah. One more funny thing. I did listen to a group of guys talk about having seen the movie because I just want to hear a little bit of feedback from some other people. And this guy goes, he didn't like it. He liked it, but he didn't like it because at the end of this movie, Han Solo should have been exactly the Han Solo that we got when you meet him in the canteen.
No.
Same attitude. He didn't have that attitude. He didn't have all the, and I'm thinking, why?
Why? Because
a lot of life happens. This takes place 10 years before we get that guy. I'm not the same person exactly.
I was about to say, let's put it this way. I was about to ask you, like, at the point in time that you were 20 years old, let's just say Han Solo is 20 years old at this.
Yeah.
And let's say at the end of Return of the Jedi, he's the same age as what you are.
Yeah.
How different would you be? Honestly, like, your 20-year-old self was probably like myself. I can sit here and tell you right now, and just a 10 year, like what you were saying just a minute ago, just a 10 year time span for me from 32 to 42.
Yeah.
I can tell you right now, it's night and day, like night and day.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Yeah.
So why would you have a character have that much growth
in basically 3 years?
Yeah.
As in this movie.
Yeah. Because, you know, and that's what gets me is because people, you got to realize that you can't just fast forward like that. To me, that's being lazy, you know, and that's what other people would say also. So hate me if you want to, but that would just be lazy to sit there and say that you have that much growth of a character.
Yeah.
And it's just, and I was just going with the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
If you went from 3 years from what you have from 20 to, I guess what Han is supposed to be in Force Awakens is like 65 or 70 or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just absurd to sit there and think that. Yeah. You know? But anyways, yeah, it is what it is. I love it. It's my new obsession right now. There's a Star Wars movie that came out. So the next thing we have to look forward after this now is Celebration. There's not another Star Wars movie in like 500 and something days, I think is what it said. I like using that Star Wars app because I was trying to get an official countdown to Celebration already. And, you know.
Well, that's good. So everybody won't be so fatigued by the time it comes out.
I know it, right?
You're so exhausted, people.
I know. It's just ridiculous. I won't get into that on this episode. We're already at an hour and 15 just about. Yeah. So I won't get into that. We'll save that topic for another time. But I think that's going to wrap it up for us today, man.
Heck yeah.
All right. Well, anyways, if you guys want to come by and talk to us, you know, between shows, you can find us at Twitter. That's at 2BT show. That's at the number 2BT show.
And that's where our good buddy Ronnie talked to us, and he said it was fun and a great movie.
Oh yeah. And I'm going to add this in, and I'm going to tell Ronnie to listen to the show and say, hey, Ronnie, Enfys Nest is not the of the lady in the spaceport, because Enfys Nest even mentions that. Oh crap. I just kind of gave a big spoiler away.
Of oh Enfys no.
Nest.
Oh,
color. Anyways, it's Enfys Nest mentions that her mother was killed.
You did it again.
Yeah. It's all right. We'll just leave it in. You can put some blaster sounds over it or something like that. But anyways, make Ronnie listen to the show all the way to the end and be like, ha, 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 I got your answer for you, Ronnie, but you got to listen for a change. No, he probably listens. I don't know. He might not. If he doesn't, that's not going to hurt my feelings.
He does.
But anyways, if you guys want to email us, the email is the same thing as our Twitter address. So that's at the number 2BT show at gmail.com. That's number 2, the number 2BT show at gmail.com. Go by and check out Retro Reprise. Adam does some pretty awesome shows. You can find him on YouTube and Twitch. I know I think he streams every Friday night at midnight.
Yeah.
I think is what it is. So you can go by and check out his live streams on Twitch. Go by Nerdy Legion. Go check out. There's a vast amounts of podcasts.
Lots of podcasts. Comic Talk Today. Almost not every day, but almost every day of the week, you're going to have interesting conversation.
Yeah. Podcast of 1,000 Holds. I always go to that one just because I like the name of it.
It's a great name.
Yeah, it is.
That's for anybody out there that loves wrestling.
Yeah, 571 days till
571 days
till the next Star Wars movie. So,
well, thank God,
it gives us time to relax and get that fatigue coming out and stuff. Yeah. Anyways, there's that. There's a Tommy Wimey podcast hour.
Yeah,
with our good buddy Ronnie.
I got my good shirt on. Yeah, right now.
Exactly. Tons of podcasts on there for you to check out. While you're there, click on the Audible button and go by and sign up for an Audible book. Get you some free awesome books to tickle your ear holes with and just while the time away. What's your pick for this week? I haven't even used my credit yet.
You still haven't used credit?
I haven't
credit.
Used my credit yet. I was trying to bank it up so that
send
way.
Send it to me. I've been listening to two books. One that I got for free because of somehow I worked some magic through being a Prime member as a free book through.
Heck yeah, dude.
It's a free book through being a Prime member, and they also just went ahead and let you have the Audible version free. Also, it's A.G. Riddle, The Atlantis Gene. I'm still working my way through it. Pretty fast-paced, fun story in itself.
Yeah.
And I'm also, because I can't focus hardly most of the time, I'm also listening to Blood Meridian.
Awesome.
And the narration of it, the audible book of it.
Yeah.
Those are my picks.
Awesome. All right.
Don't listen to Blood Meridian, though, if you have a sensitive stomach. Pretty gross.
All right, well, I think that's going to do it for us today. I'm David.
I'm Michael.
2BT, signing out.
Adios.
Vaya con Dios.
Oh, jeez.
Good Lord. What? What made me this way?
It is hot.
It is hot.
So hot.
Kind of like me. It is hot.
Yeah, I like fish sticks. I like putting fish sticks in my mouth.
What?
Fish sticks.
Good God.
Oh. Something went wrong somewhere or something went right somewhere.
Right.
There's a naked chicken there.
Oh, we got him. Put him up.
Well, I used to love her. But I had to kill her. I used to love her. Oh, yeah, but I had to kill her.
Hey, I mean, well, I love you in all sense of the word, all of y'all. But that's, that, man, whatever.
I'm the jerk that wrote a million word prequel to the real story.
Right. Oh, God. Oh. Dude, I like.
I don't read too well.
I don't know my words.
I just like looking at the funny
ones. Right. You know your words. I don't know mine. You
get that wild. Whole alphabet thing confused right. me.
Oh, just do like I do. Give up. Just give up on everything. I don't care. The environment's dying. I don't care. Just give up.
Oh, my.
I don't know if this is fun for anybody listening, but it's kind of oh, my God. Got a play to win, man.
I want to make love to you, woman. I want to lay you down by the fire. Caress your womanly body. Make it moan and perspire.
Yeah. Water rum,
cigarette rum. Boom. I can either A, clench it, and hope that my body just reabsorbs it. Maybe it'll turn into a burp.
Burp. Burp, burp.
Are you ready for your vasectomy?
Mike, edit this out.
Yeah. I want to be captain of the committee that makes sure you guys don't F this up.
I swear to God, dude, it came out with a vengeance, too. I don't know. Oh, my God. I don't know if, like, the...
Yeah, it's glorious. Yeah. Santa Claus is real. Oh, well, look, he's not that bad of a dude.
Straight to the fart noises. There's only one day.
He's a little guy, red hair... that he likes to sing and play his lute.
I don't know, maybe it's my upbringing or something.
I don't know, like, it's just fun. I'm texting, be like, oh, well, you know, my feats are better than your feats.
Man. You're an old man and pretty much done.
There you go.
Yeah.
Dude.
Everything's better with reverb.
Oh, yeah. Excellent.
Giant lump of wet dough. Okay.
Where are you from? When I was like, Texas.
Oh, whoa. Now, how dare you say that to little Timothy?
Yeah.
This, by the way, spoilers.
Hey.
I guess it's the Texas thing.
I love my family.
Excellent.
Oh, you want to be a tough guy? I'll be a tough show what tough is. And
Go home.
Dude, you mind if I sit over here? And he's like, dude, knock yourself out, man. Oh, it must be a Texas thing. Don't do that, by the way.
I'm having a brain freeze. Oh, no. And I'm like,
Ujamaa of the heebie-jeebies.
Face down in a gutter. I don't want to admit defeat, though.
Well, this is not good.
Like, dude, I love it. I love it all.
Whoa, dude. Oh, my God.
Star Wars guys are crazy.
My butt has a cannon.
If you're going to go out, that's the way to do it.
I dig it. It belongs in a museum. Oh, dude, hurry up and get here. Yeah.
Man in black fled across the desert, and the gunslinger followed.
The Last Jedi. Run DMC.
Han, Luke, Leia.
R2 and 3PO.
Rey, Finn.
Yoda, Kenobi.
Poe.
Do or do not, there is no try.
Chewbacca has to die.
The Palpatine. Betray you.
Chewbacca. You know R.A. Salvatore.
This is a good guy, this is a bad guy. This is a good guy, this is a bad guy. Go.
Dang it. Yeah. But, yeah, like, crap, I'm just, like, stuttering and rambling there. Beans are a wonderful fruit. The more you eat, the more you toot. The more you toot, the better you feel, so eat beans with every meal. I have a belief that if the more you fart, the longer you'll live.
No! You don't stop playing because you get old.
Yeah.
You get old because you stop playing.
That wasn't terrible.
That was pathetic. Boom.
Nerdy Legion.
Nerdylegion.com.